Teaching meditation can be a deeply rewarding experience. Help others improve their mental and emotional well-being, reduce stress, improve focus, increase self-awareness and self-regulation, all while deepening your own practice and understanding. Join acclaimed author, Buddhist teacher, and Emmy Award-winning musician David Nichtern on Tuesday, May 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a free online discussion on teaching meditation in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern on May 28th.
I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Server Member Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Server Member Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/innerAcademy.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Throughout our lives, we long to love ourselves more deeply and to feel connected with others. Instead, we often contract, fear intimacy, and suffer a bewildering sense of separation. We crave love, and yet we are lonely. Our delusion of being separate from one another, of being apart from all that is around us, gives rise to all of this pain. What is the way out of this? Spiritual practice by uprooting our personal mythologies of isolation uncovers the radiant, joyful heart within each of us and manifests this radiance to the world.
Hello and welcome to the Metta Hour podcast with Sharon Salzberg. I'm Lily Cushman, and I produce this podcast. And today we're coming to you with episode 238 and a special release today that is a brand new excerpt of a brand new offering of Sharon's very first book, Loving Kindness, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness. And the book came out in 1995, which it's been a minute. It was re-released in 2020, and just this year, coming out the 23rd of April 2024, the audiobook version is now available. So it's a very quite literal full circle moment, and Sharon herself is reading the book, and it was quite fun to go back to her very first writing. Of course, now she's written many, many other books, but this one being her first holds a special place in her heart. And also the role that this book has played in the wellness community, in the meditation community. It is quite literally the book that people go to, specifically learning the technique of loving kindness meditation. And so we're very excited to bring it to a whole new audience for those of you who consume your books in audio format. We also have a special appearance by Jon Kabat-Zinn, who wrote the foreword to the book back in 1995. And he reads that foreword as part of the audiobook as well. So this is 30 minutes of the book, and you can get yourself a copy of the entire audiobook. You can go through our website at SharonSalzberg.com. So let's dive in. Loving Kindness, the Revolutionary Art of Happiness.
Shambhala Publications presents Loving Kindness, the Revolutionary Art of Happiness by Sharon Salzberg. This audiobook is narrated by Sharon Salzberg, published by Shambhala Publications, 2024. This is what should be done by those who are skilled in goodness and who know the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upward to the skies and downward to the depths, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. The Buddha's words on loving kindness. Metta Sutta.
Foreword. Many of Sharon Salzberg's readers will know that over the main portal of the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, where she teaches, is inscribed in large letters the word metta, Pali for loving kindness. Some may have wondered, as I have on occasion, why that particular word is up there, rather than, say, mindfulness, or insight, or equanimity, or wisdom, or compassion. For me, in the end, all of these qualities, which we cultivate in meditation practice on long retreats at places such as IMS and in our daily lives, wherever we find ourselves, distill down to this simple quality of heart. And whether and how we allow it to express itself in the minute daily conduct of our lives, both toward ourselves and toward others. The Dalai Lama has said, "My religion is kindness." If we all adopted such a stance and embodied it in thought and action, inner and outer peace would be immediate for in reality, they're never not present, only obscured, waiting to be discovered. This is the work and the power of loving kindness, the embrace that allows no separation between self, others, and events, the affirmation and honoring of a core goodness in others and in oneself. The practice of loving kindness is, in fact, the ground of mindfulness practice, requiring the same non-judging, non-grasping, non-rejecting orientation toward the present moment, an orientation that invites and makes room for calmness, clarity of mind and heart, and understanding. In this book, Sharon shows us how we might systematically cultivate loving kindness in our lives. Given the pain and turmoil that we often experience, the endemic misperceptions of the human mind regarding who and what we are, and how we relate to the stress and pain of our lives, practicing loving kindness is an arduous discipline, no less so than attending to one's breathing or observing the stream of one's thought. But it is an extremely effective path, a fundamental path in the opening of mind and heart. In it are to be found the seeds of profound happiness, inner well-being, and healing for ourselves and for all the beings, human and otherwise, all miraculous, with whom we share this fragile living planet. May this book help further that process, far and wide. Jon Kabat-Zinn, July 1994.
Introduction. Throughout our lives, we long to love ourselves more deeply and to feel connected with others. Instead, we often contract, fear intimacy, and suffer a bewildering sense of separation. We crave love, and yet we are lonely. Our delusion of being separate from one another, of being apart from all that is around us, gives rise to all of this pain. What is the way out of this? Spiritual practice, by uprooting our personal mythologies of isolation, uncovers the radiant, joyful heart within each of us and manifests this radiance to the world. We find, beneath the wounding concepts of separation, a connection both to ourselves and to all beings. We find a source of great happiness that is beyond concepts and beyond convention. Freeing ourselves from the illusion of separation allows us to live in a natural freedom rather than be driven by preconceptions about our own boundaries and limitations. The Buddha described the spiritual path that leads to this freedom as the liberation of the heart, which is love. And he taught a systematic, integrated path that moves the heart out of isolating contraction into true connection. That path is still with us as a living tradition of meditation practices that cultivate love, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. These four qualities are among the most beautiful and powerful states of consciousness we can experience. Together they are called in Pali, the language spoken by the Buddha, the Brahma-viharas. Brahma means heavenly. Vihara means abode or home. By practicing these meditations, we establish love, Pali metta, compassion, karuna, sympathetic joy, mudita, and equanimity, upekkha, as our home. I first encountered the practice of the Brahma-viharas when I was introduced to Buddhism in 1971 in India. I had joined many other people in what turned out to be a significant migration of Westerners seeking the spiritual teachings of the East. I was very young, but my longing for a deeper understanding of life and of the suffering I had already endured drew me there. One thing we did encounter was more suffering, as we face the extremes of climate and tropical illnesses of India. Several years later, after a number of us had founded the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, a friend with whom I had spent several years in India was talking to one of the physicians working at the local clinic in Barre. She was describing the terrible heat in the summers of New Delhi, when the temperatures can exceed 110 degrees. One summer, when she was trying to renew her visa, she was forced to go from government office to government office in that intense heat. My friend was explaining to the doctor that she had been especially weak that summer because she was just recovering from being afflicted with hepatitis, amoebic dysentery, and worms. I can remember the doctor looking at her, absolutely appalled, and saying, "You had all those diseases and you were trying to renew your visa? What were you doing, holding out for leprosy?" On the face of it, our sojourn in India was indeed a story of disease, discomfort, and a heroic effort or foolish determination to carry on. But despite those physical sufferings my friend was relating, I know that her internal experience was one of sheer magic. Our time in India, completely outside of our customary social pretenses or mannered responses, allowed each of us an entirely new look at ourselves. Through meditation practice, many of us came into initial contact with our own capacity for goodness and felt the elation of discovering a new connection with all beings. I cannot imagine anything that I would be willing to trade for that discovery. No money, no power over others, no trophies or accolades. That year, sitting under the Bodhi tree in Bodh Gaya, where the Buddha attained enlightenment, I voiced my aspiration to realize the gift of love that the Buddha himself had realized and embodied. The Brahmaviharas, love, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, are that very gift, and the opportunity to practice them is the legacy of the Buddha. By following this path, we learn to develop skillful mental states and let go of unskillful ones. The integrity we develop on a spiritual path comes from being able to distinguish for ourselves the habits and influences in the mind which are skillful and lead to love and awareness, from those which are unskillful and reinforce our false sense of separation. The Buddha once said, "Abandon what is unskillful. One can abandon the unskillful. If it were not possible, I would not ask you to do it. If this abandoning of the unskillful would bring harm and suffering, I would not ask you to abandon it. But as it brings benefit and happiness, therefore I say, abandon what is unskillful. Cultivate the good. One can cultivate the good. If it were not possible, I would not ask you to do it. If this cultivation were to bring harm and suffering, I would not ask you to do it. But as this cultivation brings benefit and happiness, I say, cultivate the good. Abandoning unskillful states that cause suffering is not something we do out of fear of or contempt for those states, or out of contempt for ourselves, for having those states arise in the mind. Abandoning the unskillful isn't accomplished by angrily shoving or pushing away our habits of separation. Rather, it comes as we learn to truly love ourselves and all beings, so that love provides the light by which we bear witness to those burdens, watching them simply fall away. Rather than obsessively following states of mind such as anger, fear, or grasping, states that will bring harm to ourselves and others, we can let go as though dropping a burden. We are indeed burdened by carrying around habitual unskillful reactions. As wisdom reveals to us that we don't need these reactions, we can abandon them. Cultivating the good means recovering the incandescent power of love that is present as a potential in all of us. An awakened life demands a fundamental revisioning of the limited views we hold of our own potential. To say that we cultivate the good means that we align ourselves with an expansive vision of what is possible for us, and we use the tools of spiritual practice to sustain our real, moment-to-moment experience of that vision. This vision is always available to us. It doesn't matter how long we may have been stuck in a sense of our limitations. If we go into a darkened room and turn on the light, it doesn't matter if the room has been dark for a day or a week or 10,000 years. We turn on the light and it is illumined. Once we contact our capacity for love and happiness, the good, the light has been turned on. Practicing the Brahmaviharas is a way of turning on the light and then tending it. It is a process of deep spiritual transformation. This transformation comes from actually walking the path, putting the values and theories into practice, bringing them to life. We make the effort to abandon the unskillful and cultivate the good with the conviction that, in fact, we can be successful. If it were not possible, I would not ask you to do it. Remembering this statement of the Buddha, we walk the path knowing that each of us is capable of actualizing our singular potential for love and truth. The path begins with cultivating appreciation of our oneness with others through generosity, non-harming, right speech, and right action. Then on the foundation of these qualities, we purify our minds through the concentration practices of meditation. As we do, we come to experience wisdom through recognizing the truth and become deeply aware of the suffering caused by separation and of the happiness of knowing our connection with all beings. The culmination of this recognition is called by the Buddha the Sure Heart's Release. Coming to an understanding of the true nature of the heart and of happiness is the fulfillment of a spiritual path. The practice of the Brahmaviharas is both a means to this understanding and a natural expression of it. My own intensive practice of the four Brahmaviharas began in Burma in 1985. Under the guidance of Sayadaw Upandita, a Theravada meditation master, my days were completely devoted to nurturing and cultivating love, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. What extraordinary days! That protected period of retreat so clarified and strengthened the Brahmaviharas that when the retreat was over, I found that they did not erode, but had truly become my home. At times, of course, I lose touch with these qualities, but my homing instinct for happiness now brings me back to them. In this book, I offer the meditative techniques I first encountered in India and later systematically learned in Burma. All of my teachers, since the time I first started to practice Buddhism, have each in their own way shown me the blessing of loving kindness and the sense of great possibility it provides. This book comes out of tremendous appreciation for each one of them. The meditative techniques presented here are offered out of the immense gratitude I feel for having had the opportunity to learn these practices and out of the wish that others may benefit from them. Chapter 1, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness. Only Connect, E.M. Forster. We can travel a long way and do many different things, but our deepest happiness is not born from accumulating new experiences. It is born from letting go of what is unnecessary and knowing ourselves to be always at home. True happiness may not be at all far away, but it requires a radical change of view as to where to find it. A meditator at one of our first retreats found this out in a very pointed way. Before we established the center of the Insight Meditation Society, we had to rent sites for long meditation retreats. For our first one, we rented a monastery with a beautiful chapel. In order to turn the chapel into a meditation hall where we could sit on the floor, we had to remove all the pews and store them in a large back room. Owing to a shortage of sleeping accommodations, one of the meditators slept in a corner of that back room for the duration of the retreat. During the course of the retreat, this meditator began to experience a lot of aches and pains. Feeling quite annoyed and disturbed by them, he spent a long time searching the monastery for the perfect chair, one that would allow him to sit without pain. Unable to find it, he decided that his only recourse was to sneak into the monastery workshop at night to build himself a chair. He meticulously planned how he would do this without being discovered. Then, confident that he would soon have the solution to his problems, he went to the workshop to look over the tools and materials available. Back in the room where he was staying, he sat down in one of the pews stored there and set about designing the absolutely perfect meditation chair, guaranteed to end suffering. As he was sitting there working, he realized that he was feeling happier and happier. At first, he thought the happiness came because he was creating the unheralded, revolutionary, perfect design. Then suddenly he realized that, in fact, he was so happy because he was remarkably comfortable sitting on one of the pews. He looked around and saw that there were about 300 of those pews right in his own room. What he was looking for had been right in front of him all along. Instead of taking that torturous mental journey, he could have just sat down. Sometimes we take quite a journey, physically or mentally or emotionally, when the very love and happiness we want so much can be found by just sitting down. We spend our life searching for something we think we don't have, something that will make us happy. But the key to our deepest happiness lies in changing our vision of where to seek it. As the great Japanese poet and Zen master Hakuin said, "Not knowing how near the truth is, people seek it far away. What a pity. They are like one who, in the midst of water, cries out in thirst so imploringly." Ordinary happiness comes from the experience of pleasure, the satisfaction for a little while of getting what we want. Such happiness is like the temporary appeasement of an unhappy, insatiable child. We reach out for the consolation of a momentary distraction. Then we are upset when it changes. I have a friend who is 4 years old. When he gets frustrated or does not get what he wants, the hallways of his house echo with his cries, "Nobody loves me anymore." We as adults often feel the same. When we do not get what we want, or when we get what we want, only to have it change, it seems as though all the love in the universe has been withdrawn from us. Happiness becomes an either-or situation. Just like those of the four-year-old, our interpretations and judgments obstruct clear seeing. Life is just as it is, despite our protests. For all of us, there's a constant succession of pleasurable and painful experiences. Once I was hiking with friends in Northern California. We had decided beforehand to follow a certain trail for the first 3 days, and then to retrace our steps for the next three. On the third day of this arduous hike, we found ourselves in a long, steady downhill slope. After several hours of this, one of my friends, suddenly realizing what all this walking downhill implied for the next day, when we would be retracing our steps, turned to me and said glumly, "In a dualistic universe, downhill can mean only one thing. The unrelenting flux of life's changing conditions is inevitable. Yet we labor to hold on to pleasure, and we labor equally hard to avoid pain. So many images from our world tell us that it is wrong to suffer. Advertising, social mores, and cultural assumptions suggest that feeling pain or sadness is blameworthy, shameful, humiliating. Underlying these messages is an expectation that somehow we should be able to control pain or loss. When we experience mental or physical pain, we often feel a sense of isolation, a disconnection from humanity and life. Our shame sets us apart in our suffering at the very times when we need most to connect. Conventional transitory happiness carries a subtle undercurrent, not only of loneliness, but also of fear. When things are going well, when we're experiencing pleasure and are getting what we want, we feel obliged to defend our happiness because it seems so fragile, unstable. As though our happiness needed constant protection, we deny the very possibility of suffering. We cut ourselves off from facing it in ourselves and in others, because we fear that it will undermine or destroy our good fortune. Thus, in order to hold on to our pleasure, we refuse to recognize the humanity of a homeless person on the street. We decide that the suffering of others is not relevant to our own lives. We cut ourselves off from facing the world's suffering because we fear it will undermine or destroy our own happiness. In that highly defended state, we withdraw into so terrible an aloneness that we cannot experience true joy. How strange our conditioning is, to feel so alone in our pain and to feel so vulnerable and isolated in our happiness. For some people, a single powerful experience may propel them out of this isolation. Ashoka was an emperor in northern India, about 250 years after the time of the Buddha. In the early years of his reign, this powerful emperor was bloodthirsty and greedy for the expansion of his empire. He was also a very unhappy man. One day, after a particularly terrible battle that he had launched in order to acquire more territory, he walked on the battlefield amid the appalling spectacle of corpses of men and animals strewn everywhere, already rotting in the sun and being devoured by carrion-eating birds. Ashoka was aghast at the carnage he had caused. Just then, a Buddhist monk came walking across the battlefield. The monk did not say a word, but his being was radiant with peace and happiness. Seeing that monk, Ashoka thought, "Why is it that I, having everything in the world, feel so miserable? Whereas this monk has nothing in the world, apart from the robes he wears and the bowl he carries, yet he looks so serene and happy in this terrible place." Ashoka made a momentous decision on that battlefield. He pursued the monk and asked him, "Are you happy? If so, how did this come to be?" In response, the monk, who had nothing, introduced the emperor, who had everything, to the Buddhist teachings. As a consequence of this chance encounter, Ashoka devoted himself to the practice and study of Buddhism and changed the entire nature of his reign. He stopped waging imperialistic wars. He no longer allowed people to go hungry. He transformed himself from a tyrant into one of history's most respected rulers, acclaimed for thousands of years after as just and benevolent. Ashoka's own son and daughter carried Buddhism from India to Sri Lanka. The teachings took root there, and from India and Sri Lanka spread to Burma and Thailand and throughout the world. Our access to these teachings today, so many centuries and cultural transitions later, is a direct result of Ashoka's transformation. The radiance of that one Buddhist monk is still affecting the world today. One person's serenity changed the course of history and delivered to us the Buddhist path to happiness. The basis of the Buddhist psychological teaching is that our efforts to control what is inherently uncontrollable cannot yield the security, safety, and happiness we seek. By engaging in a delusive quest for happiness, we only bring suffering upon ourselves. In our frantic search for something to quench our thirst, we overlook the water all around us and drive ourselves into exile from our own lives.
Hey folks, thanks for listening. If you'd like to get yourself the complete copy of this audiobook for Loving Kindness, you can head over to our website, sharonsalzberg.com, or find it directly on Audible or Apple Books. For all things Sharon, including online courses, her upcoming teaching schedule, as well as a free guided meditation, you can also head over to sharonsalzberg.com. This has been the Metta Hour podcast, brought to you by the Be Here Now Network. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. And may you live with ease.